Good evening, America. And planet Earth. Brad Friedman here for Mike Malloy. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. That's right, but no, I'm not Mike. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly, humble citizen, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker from bradblog.com here for one more night and one more night only. So, truth seekers, never fear. Mike Malloy will return next Monday, but until then, you got me. Get used to it. It is Accountability Radio. It's Accountability Friday, which, of course, followed Accountability Thursday and Accountability Wednesday and Tuesday and Monday and all of that stuff. At least when I'm in front of the microphone, it's about accountability all the time. God knows we need some in this nation, don't we? Speaking of accountability, we're going to be joined shortly in just a few minutes here from with Jody Evans of Code Pink. This is a Code Pink alert. She is in Las Vegas right now, even as we speak, on the in front of the Performing Arts Center at UNLV, where Karl Rove will be speaking tonight. And we'll get yet another visit from Jody Evans, who attempted to arrest him last month out here in Los Angeles. And this exclusive Brad Blog alert, she did so again today at Barnes & Noble in Las Vegas. We've got the exclusive story over at bradblog.com, and we will get it straight from the horse's mouth in just a few minutes. The good news is she didn't get arrested in trying to arrest the war criminal, CIA, outer, whatever else you want to call him, Karl Rove. She hasn't forgotten about accountability, so we're going to talk to her in a few minutes. Actually, do you have that? It's a sort of an ironic bit here. You got that clip from last month when she tried to arrest Karl Rove here in Los Angeles. Here's what Rove had to say. Just a little of irony to start the show. Go ahead.
With no visible security around, Rove was left to fend for himself and engaged the protesters in some heated exchanges.
With all due respect, this goes to show the totalitarianism of the left. They don't believe in dialogue.
Right.
They don't believe in courtesy. They don't believe in First Amendment rights for anybody but themselves.
Oh, the irony. This coming from the guy who's been out there supporting the tea baggers who have been shouting down at, you know, congressmen at town halls and it's the left who doesn't believe in free speech for anybody but themselves. Okay. Irony much. We're also going to be joined a little bit later on by our friend Bob Kincaid from the Head On Radio Network. He's also a West Virginia environmental activist. He has had his eyes on the coal industry out there and what they are doing. Speaking of accountability, what they are doing, as we're still looking at now 25 dead miners, four who are still not rescued yet in the mines of Massey Energy and their horrible, horrible CEO, Don Blankenship. Talking about accountability. We will try our best to deliver some there later. Somebody's got to, because, oh man, more than 3,000 safety violations since 1995, and this guy has the temerity to come on and, well, we'll get to that later. I don't want to preempt myself. Even Obama was coming out and talking about how, talk about accountability. Obama was talking about how the employer, in this case, Massey Energy, is interested in the safety of the miners. Really? Really, Obama? I'm sorry, Mr. President? Really? Okay. What else do we got here before we're going to get to a quick break, and then we're going to come back with Jody, but I want to a couple of other items here that we will be covering tonight. Oh, and the phone number. See? I got to remember to do that. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. I will, again, try to get in as many of your voices, your calls, as I can tonight. Don't use Mike's regular number. Use 877-520-1150. You can also tweet me at The Brad Blog. That's my name over at Twitter, The Brad Blog. And stop by our chat room at bradblog.com, which is being hosted by the lovely Desi Doyen and Jeannie Dean. And they'll be in there serving wine and cheese and whatever else goes on at the chat room. So stop on by bradblog.com, and top item there, you will find the chat room. George W. Bush knew that Guantanamo prisoners were innocent. He didn't care. And yet we still have to look forward, not back. Right, Mr. President? Mr. Obama? Okay. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. Justice Stevens announces his retirement, and Glenn Greenwald, another one of my favorite accountability bloggers, says beware one of the leading candidates to take his place, Elena Kagan, currently the Solicitor General, may push the court irreversibly to the right for decades to come. Let's see if we can preempt that one, shall we? And let's see, generic ballot points towards a possible 50-seat loss for Democrats. Okay. How's that going down the middle working for you there, Democrats? We'll talk about that in a little bit. And we're going to talk about, Bank of America insider pleaded guilty to hacking ATMs. ATMs, Bank of America. Who's that? Diebold ATMs. That's who they use. That's right, Diebold ATMs. Once again, hacked from the inside. The real threat against not just ATMs, but yes, electronic voting machines that nobody seems to give a damn about. We still do. We will talk about that tonight, I promise you, and about the fact that the real threat is from the insiders, like the guy at the B of A, the insider who hacked the machine. Just the way the real threat is from the insiders in elections, like election officials. No, it's not from Acorn. God. All right. Did I give the number out? I did. 877-520-1150. And finally, before we go to break here, though we don't usually like to play the right and left card, we try to do the right and wrong card instead, because even though the right is really wrong more than the left these days, the left is not very right. So we're going to talk about all of that, but let's see. This is from Steve Bannon. Washington Monthly points out that Michelle Bachmann at this rally, I think it was yesterday, up in Minnesota, where Sarah Palin was there, and a little Sean Hannity, a big right-wing teabaggery fest or whatever. She said, and I quote, I don't have the audio, so I'll just read it. If, in fact, there is a nation who is compliant with all the rules ahead of time, and they've complied with the United Nations on nuclear proliferation, if they fire against the United States a biological weapon, a chemical weapon, or maybe a cyber attack, well then, we aren't going to be firing back with nuclear weapons, said Bachmann. Does that make us all feel safe? And of course the crowd shouted, no. This is in response to Obama's new nuclear thing, right? Well, Bannon breaks that down a little bit. He says, there are obviously a lot of errors of fact and judgment in Bachmann's quote, but that, quote, maybe a cyber attack is the part that stands out. To be sure, he writes, attacks on a country's computer network can be severely damaging. But even Bachmann, as confused as she is, has to realize that responding to a cyber attack with a nuclear bomb would be the most insane act in the history of humanity. Does she understand what a nuclear bomb does? Steve Bannon notes. Cyber attack. My website has been hacked. Let's break out the nukes. God, she's a genius. Sean Hannity's favorite right-winger there, too. Her and Sarah Palin. Good stuff. All right. All of that, much more, straight ahead, including Jody Evans from Code Pink, from Vegas, ready to go. We don't know what she's going to do tonight to Karl Rove. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe there'll be another citizen's arrest. Let's hope it's not her. Oh, man, would I like to see him finally frog march. You're listening to Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy program. Oh, yeah, I got to keep. Oh, yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Yeah, see, I took too long. See, I'm a blogger. I'm not a radio guy. I'm just taking back the media because someone has got to. So we're going to find out. Is she going to arrest him again? Is she going to get arrested? She's there, by the way, with her, what do they call it? The pink tank. Bunch of folks, including some Iraq War veterans, as I understand it. There may be some accountability in Vegas tonight. We'll find out. From the front steps. Hey, are you out in Vegas, by the way? Go on over to UNLV. Join the party there at the Performing Arts Center. All right, Jody Evans from Code Pink, right after this. Brad in for Malloy. My, how things have changed.
In the impact segment tonight, Prime Minister Maliki addressed the House and Senate. Today he's the Prime Minister of Iraq, I should have mentioned that, thanking the USA for its efforts in his country. But there were some catcalls.
The chair notes a disturbance in the gallery. The sergeant-at-arms will secure order by removing those engaging in disruption.
Joining us now from Washington, reaction to all this, Fox News correspondent Major Garrett. First of all, that was Code Pink, right? The crazy group that disrupted the...
One protester, Bill, one only, caught on camera, escorted out, a minor deal.
Minor deal.
Going to be charged?
Yes, with disturbing Congress.
Okay.
Disrupting Congress.
That's a pretty serious charge because that's a capital offense. Local D.C. police, right?
That's Capitol Police. It'll be dealt with quickly and largely forgotten.
Yeah. Okay. Can we send her to Guantanamo? Is that possible?
I guess not. I'll leave that up to you, Bill.
All right. Well,
brilliant.
It's up to me. She's on. Come on, Major. You don't give her that. Don't give her the factor tribunal. She'll be swimming with the fishes.
Fishes. Let's kill them. Well, that was a couple years ago, Bill O'Reilly. Yeah, back when protesting, you know, was an American-hating thing to do. Now it's great. Now it's great. Of course, Bill O'Reilly isn't threatening to throw any of those teabaggers into Gitmo for some reason. Those guys are heroes. Well, speaking of heroes, as far as I'm concerned, we're joined by Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. She is, Jody, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi.
How are you? Now, you're in the front of the Performing Arts Center at UNLV tonight.
I am sitting here right now. We're waiting for the Howard Dean Karl Rove debate to begin.
Oh, yes. And will you be arresting Howard Dean tonight?
Oh, no. I will hopefully be attempting yet again to get my handcuffs on Karl Rove.
Okay, good. Now, earlier this afternoon, you did this. We played before the break. Last time you tried to arrest him in Los Angeles out here last month. This afternoon as well at Barnes & Noble's, you and a group of folks from the Pink Tank tried to cuff him again, did you?
Yes, we did, and we will continue to do that until somebody decides to hold these criminals accountable. The funny thing is as soon as I finished doing that action, I got a call from Congressman Alan Grayson from Florida, and I told him what I had just done, and he, you know, was just horrified by the fact that we can't hold them accountable, and that, you know, if we don't hold these guys accountable, it will get repeated again. And not only that, it, you know, if they're not held accountable, then why does somebody else think they need to follow the law because nobody gets held accountable?
Yeah.
And I said, so why don't you call for him to be subpoenaed and come talk about his lies in Congress? And he said, well, Pelosi won't let me do it. She says she won't put anything out that has anything to do with accountability. And I said, isn't that horrible? And he said, yes, that's why we appreciate Code Pink for constantly saying the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant strategy, by the way, because I got a story here I'm going to get to later in the show that the Democrats could lose as many as 50 seats in Congress by not calling for accountability. So when you went into Barnes & Noble's today, and we do have the exclusive story over at bradblog.com, Jody Evans, what happened? Did you get close enough to get those cuffs on them, or what happened? Why didn't you get them?
Well, I got very close. I was ready to put the gun. I got close to the table. He looked up to grab the book from me and went, it's her, pulled his chair back, leaned, you know, put his body against the bookshelves, you know, with his arms back, and told the security to go after me. But so I actually got closer with the cuffs in Beverly Hills. But they were there. They were draped over the table, ready to be on his wrist. But he was back again. Yes, he runs away from Code Pink as fast as he can.
It's her. Did he really say it's her?
Yes.
Because he didn't have any security last time he was out in Beverly Hills. They had security there this time around, eh?
They had three security surrounding him. I mean, you had to go through security. They took your purse away. You know, they didn't let you near him with anything but the book, even though I had stuffed the cufflinks up my sleeve. I put the arrest complaint inside his book. I pulled it out. I showed it to him. I showed it to security, but nobody cares that I have the legal right as a citizen to arrest him.
Now, can you? Yes, you actually can arrest him. This is not just a stunt. You actually can make a citizen's arrest, correct?
Oh, yes, I have with me, you know, and handed it to him, the arrest complaint. Where I, and in each state, you know, we have a different one, but I have it with the Nevada statute 171 that says I have the right, when a felony has been, in fact, committed, to arrest the person who was, you have the reasonable cause committed it. And then I list quite a few of the felonies that he violated, of his felonies. Mm-hmm. I don't list all of them.
Well, hey, Jody, I know you got to get into this event. I got to get to a break here. Are you able to stick around for 4 minutes until I can finish up with this break and come back to you? Because if you got to go, I understand.
Yeah, I'm here.
You can stick around? Okay, great. Stick around. And hey, if you're out there, if you're listening in Vegas, get out to the Performing Arts Center at UNLV. They could use some backup. Karl Rove may escape again. Don't let it happen. All right, hang on. Jody Evans of Code Pink. You can get more information on them at codepink.org. She's going to stick with us for another minute or two because I got another question I got to get in. You're listening to Brad Friedman on The Mike Malloy Show. Stick with us. We're back in a few. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Malloy for one more night. We're speaking right now with Jody Evans, who is out at UNLV at the Performing Arts Center, where Karl Rove is getting ready to speak with Howard Dean, and maybe he's about to be arrested again. Or at least we'll try to see if he gets arrested, as Jody Evans did of Code Pink did this afternoon. You can read the story at BradBlog.com. She joins us now again. Jody, I know you got just a few more minutes there, so I have two quick questions for you. Let's see. What has to happen to make this an official arrest? I know you've been following him in L.A., now in Vegas, today at Barnes & Noble's, and now tonight. What has to happen for this to really actually happen, Jody?
Well, we need a police officer courageous enough to stand up and do the right thing. And so far that hasn't happened. I think also if enough people at an event that actually could, you know, stand up and say you should be arrested, and that the crowd would hold Rove and wait for the police and show the arrest complaint, it would be hard for an officer to say no.
So let me understand this. So you say, hey, Mr. Rove, you're under arrest for war crimes and for outing CIA agents and for all these other treasonous things, and then a police officer has to say, okay, well, you made the arrest, Jody, so I guess I have to handcuff him and haul him away? Is that how it works?
Yeah, the citizen's arrest, what you get to do is hold them until a police officer arrives and fulfills the arrest.
And so then the police officer actually writes down this arrest, this arrest actually books the guy. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, is there any honest police officers anywhere in Las Vegas who have the time to show up and help Code Pink have some accountability here for this guy who has gotten away with these crimes year after year after year that have resulted in the deaths of hundreds and thousands of not just Americans, but citizens around the world? If you're listening, Las Vegas police, please help. All right, and here's my other question. Now some accountability for you, Jody Evans and Code Pink. Are you going after Obama and the Democrats with the same vim and vigor that you protested against Bush and the Republicans when they were in charge?
Well, I think our vim and vigor matches the crime. So right now, I don't know this. I'm not aware that Obama has violated the law as horribly or caused as much damage as Rove. So I'm pointing in the direction of the place where real accountability lies for the devastation of the last 10 years, both with the stealing of elections, the lying to take us to war, the wasting of $3 trillion, the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, and the casualties of hundreds of thousands of U.S. Military. So for me right now, that is where my energy is. I have to say, however, I am handing out here at the Artemis Hall our fruitless escalation stickers that
Fruitless escalation?
Hopeless. Escalation.
Okay.
Where we, you know, it's got a picture of that famous picture of Obama, and we talk about how his military budget exceeds Bush, leaving us less money for health care. That Afghanistan is another Vietnam, and more troops, more violence, and less safe. So it's not the same vigor, but we continue to be active where we need to be so that we can end war and stop this madness.
I hear you. Okay. Well, listen. In case you didn't see the news this week, it looks like Obama has approved the assassination of an American citizen out there in Yemen. So I hope you'll think about taking them, holding them to account. I understand the magnitude of the crimes is not yet the same, but it's getting real close, and there's a lot of bombing going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan from thousands of miles above with the, you know, drone planes and everything. But I do know that Code Pink has linked up and is supporting the losing-hope.org campaign, calling on Obama to take some action. I'm going to read that letter. I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to read that letter.
I mean, the really important thing is you have to, you know, radical is to go to the root. The root of the problem is that we are not holding Bush, Roe, Cheney, et cetera, accountable. Yes.
Yep.
What happens is that you have then Obama behaving in the exact same way. If we don't go to the root of the problem and start holding the people accountable where it is the most obvious, violent, and reckless,
yep,
we can't even start to hold Obama accountable. So for me, it's like I only have so much time and energy, and I'm going to go right to the core of it, because what Karl Rove has done, I mean, it's just there is no words for it.
Listen, no, I hear you, and this is one of the complaints that I had about the Democrats, that if they let these guys get away with it, the bar is lowered, and that anything can happen, but no matter what president it is, no matter what party they're from. And yeah, I agree with you. Obama says we can't look backwards, we need to look forwards. Well, nonsense. Looking backwards is looking forward. Holding those guys accountable changes, you know, if you can arrest Bush and Rove and Cheney, that may send a pretty good message to Barack Obama. So,
right.
Jody Evans from Code Pink, go get them. Do what you got to do. Let me know how we can help out anytime. And, of course, we always appreciate the exclusives. We have the exclusive story on your attempted arrest of Karl Rove earlier today over at bradblog.com. And good luck tonight. Stay out of jail, okay?
And thanks for everything you do, Brad.
You bet. All right. Go to codepink.org and support the good guys. Yeah, they were tea partying before tea partying was cool, you know? Back when O'Reilly didn't, and Sean Hannity, back when they used to hate anybody who would speak out, anybody who would talk bad about the president. Good Lord, that was just unpatriotic. Yeah, all of a sudden, they seem to feel differently. Well, we'll see what happens out there tonight in Las Vegas. Here is, as I mentioned, Code Pink, if you go to their website, codepink.org, they've got a great big old link to losinghope.org. It's actually losing-hope.org. And you can sign on. This one is to Obama, and it's right at the top of the codepink.org page. Dear Mr. President, your administration and your party are in trouble. That is clear from the elections in Massachusetts and Virginia, from the drop in your approval ratings, from the rise of conservative opposition groups. This is a time when progressive forces in this country need to mobilize to prevent a backlash that will take this country further to the right. Oh, too late. But progressives are disappointed and demoralized. Look at me. This is what you're supposed to sign on to, if you like. In 2008, I was one of millions united for hope and change. As 2010 dawns, change looks to me like more of the same. Instead of peace, we got more war. Instead of health care reform, we have an industry win that requires Americans to buy health insurance without any real cost controls. On the environment, one of your top priorities, you came back from Copenhagen with yet another non-binding resolution and more clean coal to boot. Instead of helping struggling homeowners and small businesses during the financial crisis, bank executives were rewarded and have yet to see reform. Wall Street firms ended 2009 with record bonus and profits while employment remains in double digits. You get the idea. In the meantime, it says at the end, in the meantime, I pledge to keep pushing your administration and Congress and mobilizing others, not for partisan politics, but for policies of social and environmental uplift. Sounds good to me. Go over there. You can get the link at codepink.org. Hold them all accountable. Hold their damn feet to the fire. All right, we got a lot more ahead. Dave in Bayside, I'm going to get to you very shortly here. Hang on the line. If you want to get in, 877-520-1150 is our number. And, yeah, we're going to get out early. 877-520-1150 is our number. We'll come back with your calls and a lot more stories. Oh, hackers inside of Bank of America. You know, those people are also accessing your elections. Did you hear that thing about Jody Evans mentioned that Bush is stealing elections? That was just to get on my good side, I think. All right. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Much more straight ahead from Los Angeles. Stay with us. Back to the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. One more night as spring break is apparently spreading around Georgia, or wherever the Malloys are goofing off these days. So I'm here. Hey, folks over at DU, I had posted that story about Code Pink over in the breaking news section when it was breaking earlier today. It was an exclusive to BradBlog, and I just checked over there at DU, and it's been moved again. I don't get it. I don't know. I've had a bunch of breaking stories I've been posting at DU lately. Keep getting moved. I don't know what's going on. I think one of the moderators there doesn't like me. What can I say? Anyway, you truth seekers at DU, hey, saying hey, love you. Go find out what happened there. All right. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. How should I do this? Do I have the time? All right. Let me go to Dave, and I'll get. We got more show than we got time for. We're sticking around. We're doing a fourth hour tonight. We're not doing a. Tony says no. We're not doing a fourth hour tonight. All right. Hey, Dave in Bayside, California. How are you, sir? Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Oh, I'm really great, Brad, and you do a wonderful thing, and you have been for a long time. I used to be Dave in Eureka when you were on every week with P2B Collins, yes, and our old friend Alice still speaks of you all the time.
Oh, well, God love you, and you moved to Bayside, everything okay?
Yeah, not too far away, it's just a matter of a few miles.
And you were a great activist. I remember you used to go out, what was it, like every Thursday or Friday and protest out in front of the courthouse there?
Yeah, I'm still doing it.
God love you.
I don't think that this administration pays a whole lot more attention to us than did the old one, but we do what we can. And
nope, you're right.
My thinking on this is that you've come as close as anybody to making it known that any voting machine that comes with a modem in it and that can be accessed by our neocon goons, that it is something that ends democracy in the United States for all practical purposes.
Yep. Well, I'll just go you one further. The modem has nothing to do with it. When you're dealing with a touchscreen system, it is 100% impossible. And by the way, I had invited Rand Paul, who's running in the GOP primary down there, against the Secretary of State. He's running for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. Had invited him to be on tonight to talk about this election coming up, to talk about the six election insiders, election officials who were just convicted of fraud and manipulating voting machines down there in Clay County, Kentucky. And he decided to not come. He pussyfooted his getting back to me and And what are you looking at? And then he they just said, oh, he was too busy. So I'm sorry that he was too busy. I would love to get him at some point, you know, to find out what his plans are, because Kentucky, May 18th, is about to go to the polls. The entire state practically uses touchscreen machines, which are 100% unverifiable. It is impossible if you vote on a touchscreen machine. I don't care if a paper trail comes out. 100% impossible to verify that any vote has ever been recorded accurately on any touchscreen voting machine during any election anywhere. That's with or without a modem. And when it comes to the paper ballot machines that you put through the op scan, guess what? They don't count those either. Diebold does. All right, that was my long, distracted response, Dave.
Well,
I cut you off.
You're addressing a very serious problem, because what you're saying in so many words is democracy is dead. We are not any longer allowed to vote for the candidates that we want, that these Patriot Act troopers or whoever, whatever high-tech goons that want to, can go in and invade our system and do the voting for us. Now, I've always operated on the assumption they're getting in by via the modem. Well, I'm not a high-tech enough person to be sure of that. But
well, look, Dave, here's a story today that I was going to get to later. I'll get to it now. It can be by modem, but it doesn't need to be. It's the insiders. Down there in Kentucky, I mentioned Clay County, Kentucky. About 2 weeks ago, we finally had a conviction. These guys were arrested last year. Six high-ranking election officials. Okay, we're talking about the county clerk of Clay County. We're talking about the district court judge was involved in this scheme. They had been manipulating elections for decades, according to the prosecutors. The jury found them guilty. Let's see, who else was involved in this? The school superintendent. These guys were all election officials. They were the ones who were on the inside, not just buying and selling votes, but actually changing votes on touchscreen voting machines. No modem was necessary because they had access to the machines, because they're election officials. So this comes out, Dave, this comes out today from, I got this over at CompuWorld. A Bank of America computer specialist is set to plead guilty to charges that he hacked the bank's automated tellers to dispense cash without recording the activity. Rodney Reed Cavalry of Charlotte, North Carolina, scheduled to plead guilty to a computer fraud charge next Tuesday in federal court in Charlotte, according to his attorney, who declined to comment further on the case. Cavalry was charged last week with one count of computer fraud for allegedly writing a malicious program that ran on Bank of America's computers and ATMs, according to court filings. The document says Cavalry made more than the minimum of $5,000 from the scam, but they don't spell out the total of the bank's losses. That number could come out next week when he enters his plea. Cavalry had worked in Bank of America's IT department, where he designed and maintained computer systems, including those used by the ATMs. The alleged scam ran from between March 2009 and October 2009, ran for 8 months. And they just now caught the guy, just now arrested the guy. The threat to elections when you use computers, when you don't count the ballot, is from the insiders. No modem is necessary. What the hell do I have to do to get that across to America, Dave?
I don't know. You try, and it is so desperately important that we all understand these people have rigged and are rigging our elections at will, and we don't seem to know what can we do about it.
You know what I ought to do? I ought to get on the radio, go on some national radio show, and tell everybody about it. That's what I'm going to do. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate everything that you're doing, and it's great to hear from you, my friend.
Do what you can, my friend. Do what you can.
Thanks, brother. All right. You know, what, are you going to get it, America? I know the Democrats aren't going to get it. They've had a chance. They could have had election reform here. But again, speaking of pussyfooting, they haven't done a damn thing about it. Now, Rush Holt, congressman from New Jersey, has a bill in Congress that is sort of being ignored here. He has tried to get it passed year after year. Well, it hasn't passed to date, and I'm glad that it hasn't to date, because previous versions of the bill have been terrible. They would have allowed touchscreen machines, otherwise known as direct recording electronic, DRE machines, to be used forever. And as I said, they are 100% impossible to verify that any vote has ever been recorded accurately. This is how we're running our democracy when using those machines. Now, the new version of the bill is slightly better, but it still allows for secret source code for private companies like Diebold, like ESNS, to keep their voting systems private, to keep the citizens out of public elections. Yes, I am calling for a public option in our public elections. Why don't we socialize our elections? There's an idea, isn't it? Remember that whole we the people thing? That whole self-governance thing? That whole thing that you hear these teabaggers acting like they give a damn about? Hey, teabaggers, give a damn? Then show up down there in Kentucky, start yelling and screaming that the Secretary of State down there is running uncertified voting systems, is letting citizens vote on machines that can never, ever, ever be verified as accurate. That's your democracy. That's what we're looking at, America, until we decide to do something about it. Are you with me? Let's get busy. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, in for Mike Malloy. Desi Doyen and Bob Kincaid coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Accountability Friday on the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman, your accountability blogger from bradblog.com, drafted into broadcast media duty here tonight. Broadcasting live from Los Angeles, actually downtown Burbank, as the sun sets and the fog rolls in. I think we're getting some weather here, Desi Doyen. You're not plugged in yet, are you? You got something in your mouth. You're not ready. What the... All right, Desi Doyen, my accountability buddy, is going to join me in a second as a little South Park joke for you. Desi Doyen is actually my co-host on the Green News Report. For those of you who either read bradblog.com or listen to the Green News Report on this fine progressive radio station, may know her. If you don't, if you haven't heard the Green News Report, then... I say call your radio station and complain. Tell them you want to hear it. 6 minutes. We do it a couple of times a week. And we started doing it for the folks up there in San Francisco at Green 960, and they play at the top of the hour a couple of times a week. And yesterday's report, actually, there's a couple of things that... You still have something in your mouth?
What? It was a cough drop. Come on.
But okay. Are you done now?
Yes.
Can you talk now?
Yes.
All right. By the way, stop on my Brad blog. We got a chat room over there, and Desi's been moderating it, but she's gone now. So you can say anything you want because she's on the air. Okay. We're very serious situation still out there in West Virginia at this coal mine disaster. And we're going to talk in a little bit with Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network about that. He's out in West Virginia. But no change in the status for the moment. These four miners are still.
And sadly, it looks like Governor Joe Manchin, the West Virginia governor, he came out in a press briefing tonight and said that it looks like they are going to come to a conclusion in the rescue attempt for those four West Virginia miners. He basically said that he called it finality, that the crews are prepared to try to make a run to the face. This is according to the AP, trying to make a run to the face to see if the miners are in the last refuge chamber.
All right. Well, let me hold the we'll come back to that story in a minute. Let's set this up with this is the Green News Report from yesterday. I'm going to go ahead and play this. There's also a couple of other issues here, some global warming denial crazies. Let's play the Green News Report, and then we'll come back, get your get the latest on West Virginia, and all of that straight ahead. Go ahead. Let's run Green News Report from yesterday.
A setback in the search for missing miners and who's to blame.
Corporate profits, I recognize, have to be made, but more importantly, our most precious resource, our coal miner, needs to be protected.
Plus, record snow, record heat, record rain, record landslides.
All of those records and much more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Democrats in America were put on earth to do one thing: drag the ignorant hillbilly half of this country into the next century. Which in their case is the 19th.
Good point, Bill Maher. But who's going to drag the Democrats into the 20th century? Never mind the 21st. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is sponsored by you, our listeners. Yes, you. Please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and hit that PayPal button so that we can afford to continue bringing you the most feisty green news, politics, and analysis you'll find on the mainstream media. We rely on your support. Stop by bradblog.com today, hit the PayPal button, and send your vote for the Green News Report to continue. Okay, Des, troubling news continues out of West Virginia. What do you have for us today?
Yes, it's a devastating setback today on the search for four missing miners at the Upper Big Branch Mine near Montcoal, West Virginia. Here's West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin at a press briefing.
The scenarios that we were dealing with is of the quality of the air since this morning, since the men have gone in, the quality of the air has deteriorated. We were concerned about what conditions that air would cause with an explosive atmosphere. Unfortunately, we have the worst scenarios.
This morning, rescuers were evacuated after tests showed an explosive gas mixture of the same type that is believed to have caused the explosion that killed 25 miners on Monday. Congressman Nick Rahal, a Democrat who represents the district where the mine is located, promises a full congressional investigation.
There will be investigations conducted as to what happened here. Was the mine safety laws that we passed after previous disasters such as Sago and Aracoma, were they effective or not? I happen to believe there are parts of it that are effective and parts that maybe were not. And we'll have to find out exactly the cause of this blast and then take appropriate action.
As usual, it takes a disaster to focus broadcast media attention on the coal industry, the checkered history of the mine company Massey Energy, and its controversial CEO Don Blankenship. Federal records show serious safety violations doubled at the mine last year, coinciding with a jump in production, and two citations of the most serious kind were given in January of this year relating to the ventilation system. In fact, two new citations were issued on the day of the explosion, but a mine safety inspector said those particular citations were not related to the explosion. The New York Times reports on a disturbing new trend in the coal industry since those new safety regulations that Congressman Rahal referred to were passed by Congress in 2006 after the Stako mining accident. Mining companies now stall payment of fines from these safety violations through litigation and appeals, resulting in a backlog of 18,000 appeals and over $210 million in contested fines.
Does this draw up the point that it's not the safety regulations so much that are the concern, but the enforcement of those safety regulations?
It's partly enforcement. It's also partly delaying tactics from the mining industry to avoid accountability for the enforcement that is done.
And I'm guessing the previous administration, the Bush administration, did not go out of their way to enforce those laws.
Oh, there's quite a bit of really, really not good history on that. We have more links to that on our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship is a dedicated climate change denier and has used his fortune and his company coffers to influence legislation and elections in his favor. In 2004, he poured $3 million into a West Virginia state Supreme Court election, ensuring the election of his preferred candidate to the bench, who then ruled in his favor on a multi-million dollar case against the company. The U.S. Supreme Court later overturned that ruling, saying the judge should have recused himself. Don Blankenship is on the board of directors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and is instrumental in the chamber's hostile stance to government regulation and climate change. In Brazil, over 150 people are dead and more are missing in the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro after intense storms dropped torrential rains this week, causing flooding and more than 180 landslides in the region. Another 200 people are believed dead when a mudslide washed away their hillside village in the region last night. Remember that wacky winter, the record-breaking snowstorms, and all over the news, especially in the nation's capital, and how the climate change denial industry and their friends in the media said this record snow was definitive proof that global warming was a hoax? Well, it's only the 1st of April, and already this week, the Northeast is seeing an unseasonable heat wave, breaking temperature records just 1 week after record rains and flooding.
We were able to get comment from Fox News and the global warming denialist industry on this record heat. Here it is. Yeah, That's what I thought. For much more on that, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Two quick programming notes. We welcome aboard our new Dallas affiliate, rationalbroadcasting.com. Please go check them out. Also, tonight, again, I'll be guest hosting The Mike Malloy Show, and one of my guests will be the great Mother Jones environmentalist reporter, Kate Shepard. Hope you'll join us for that. Stop by MikeMalloy.com or BradBlog.com for air affiliates and live streaming online. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that was last night. Mother Jones, Kate Shepard, we had her on last night. I guess I should have edited that out. Anyway, that was our Green News Report, and you know, I wanted to play it because frankly none of this stuff gets the kind of media attention that it needs to. We talked a little bit last night about the fact that healthcare reform, if you thought the fight over healthcare reform was something, the real fight is over climate legislation. Am I wrong, Des? I mean, isn't that, this is where you got billions and billions of dollars that are being tossed in. This is where the U.S. Chamber of, I mean, I think that was just a warm-up for the fight over climate change legislation that will make healthcare look like a tea party.
Well, yeah, it's definitely going to be the fight of the century, I think. I'm not sure people are really quite prepared for just how many billions of dollars are involved in the industries that, you know, we have to acknowledge have built our country. You know, cheap energy is the engine of growth and has been the engine of growth since the 19th century. Although we do have the capacity now and the ability to move into 21st century clean energy, right now fossil fuels are what makes this country run. And, of course, there's also external costs that go along with that. But, you know, as long as it's
free, one of those external costs we just saw this week where we lost these 25 miners, maybe another four. You know, that's the real world cost. And what is it, three miners a day die from black lung
disease, yes, on average. And it's just one of the many externalities that come from burning dirty fossil fuels. It's not just in the deaths of people who work directly with these kinds of fuels, but it's also in the air pollution, the water pollution, pollution of the soil. It's all kinds of things that these are external costs that, you know, I think it was the National Academy of Sciences last year estimated the external costs of fossil fuels in air pollution alone, healthcare costs and some of the environmental costs, is $120 billion a year. And that's not everything. That's just that one narrow area that they looked at that they estimated. And that's external costs for fossil fuels.
And the cost to national security, the fact that we've lost, you know, how many thousands of troops fighting over oil, for Christ's sake. I mean, we could be there. The people haven't noticed, but there's this free energy that's coming down from the skies all the time. Nobody's tapping into, are they, for some odd reason?
Well, it's been very difficult to get that sort of funding together and get the kind of attention paid to clean energy when you have the entrenched interests that are allowed to pollute for free and have made billions of dollars. So naturally, they're going to want to hold on to that.
And not only made billions of dollars, we'll take a quick break, and I want to get the update on the Massey mine. And I know you had something else on, was it the regulations follow-up on yesterday's report? We'll get to after the break. But talking about the profits, $45 billion in profits by ExxonMobil last year in 2009. Of course, I don't mind that. They're welcome to have their profits, I guess. But how much did these great patriots pay in federal taxes last year on their $45 billion in profit? Are you sitting down? Because I don't think you get as good a tax rate as ExxonMobil does. $45 billion in profit. They paid $0 in federal taxes last year. Other than that, we need to save this economy and cut that corporate tax rate, don't we? Unbelievable. Brad on the Malloy Show with Desi Doyen, Bob Kincaid coming up, much more straight ahead.
It's not easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
Oh, Desi, you're flashy water and the sparkles in the water.
Oh, you're sweet to say so.
I am. Brad Friedman here for Mike Malloy with my co-host and the Green News Report managing editor, Desi Doyen. We're going to be joined by Bob Kincaid in a second to talk about this. This unbelievable jerk, Don Blankenship of Massey Energy, and what he has done out there, his opinions, his attitude, the safety violation. I mean, I'm just appalled by this guy. We got some tape. I mean, this is about accountability. By the way, in case you thought this was, you know, all green and crunchy, no. We're kicking ass and taking names here as well. Des, you had two pieces of follow-up here. You had the latest, at least from AP, on the mine disaster,
right,
where we are right now?
Just to be clear, the AP is reporting that the governor, West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin, says that by midnight, rescue teams will likely know the fate of the four missing miners inside the mine where the explosion left 25 dead. They've already reached one of the chambers. There were two that were
these
potential.
These are the safety
these
chambers.
These are the safe rescue chambers, and Bob Kincaid can set us straight on this for sure,
yeah.
But I believe that those were not put in place until after 2006, the Sago mine disaster, where there was no place for them to go and there wasn't enough oxygen to save them. So they have these rescue chambers. There were two in the area that they would potentially have been able to get to if they had survived the blast. One of those rescue chambers, it looks like, is empty. Therefore, there's only one other chance. And those rescue chambers are only, you know, required by law to have 4 days' worth of oxygen and food and water in them. And so they are nearing the end of the time at which those rescue chambers would have helped them anyway. Mm.
And so he says, we'll know, Governor Manchin says, by tonight.
Well,
he feels, because they haven't been able to get in there. They had to pump like four truckloads of nitrogen in there to keep the fire from blowing up again, basically.
Right. You know, and we're talking, they're about, I think it's a mile and a half to 2 miles inside the mine. So it takes a really, really, really long time for the rescuers to get there. And then when they test the air and they find out that it's explosive and all, then they have to back out. So.
And, okay, just we got to get to a break here shortly, and then we're going to go over to Bob Kincaid out in West Virginia. But you had a quick follow-up on the regulations?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of different things. USA Today had a story today about how coal mining operators, you know, that they have all these fines. Well, what they've been doing since 2006 is they have been delaying the paying of those fines by appealing them. So it kind of puts a halt on any kind of action there so that, you know, the Mine Safety and Health Administration is allowed to shut down a mine for violations, but but not if it's in appeal. So they can keep going if they have a violation in appeal. They've only paid 7% of the fines they've received in the last 3 years. That's 113 million fines and major penalties that have not actually been paid because they're on appeal right now.
Yeah.
That's the majority of them.
And it looks like Massey Energy was able to come up with yet another trick. This was in the New York Times, and I hate to rely on the New York Times these days for anything, frankly. As some of you may know, but they reported that the company was told, Massey Energy was told, that it could be cited for a pattern of violations, which would have allowed for stricter federal oversight of the mine. Yet, the mine escaped the stepped-up enforcement, even though it continued to amass violations, according to federal records, with some pretty clever tricks. Anything to avoid accountability. So we're going to cover that with Bob Kincaid in a bit after this break. And what was the other thing that I wanted to mention here about that? Oh, Obama. What Obama had to say. You know, no, I know we don't have time.
Okay.
But we'll play it when we come back. We need some accountability there, too. He was standing in the Rose Garden today supporting Massey Energy. And saying that the employees, that their employers care about safety. Really? Do they? I don't think the record shows as much. We will ask Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio Network out in West Virginia when we come back. Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy program. Stay with us. Much more. Blind commissioner. They've got him in a trance. One hand is tied to the tightrope walker.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall.
We're never scared. What? Is that you, Tony? I'm blaming Tony. It's the computer. Blame the computer. Yes, I am. Stuck in the middle with you. No place I would rather be here live on the Mike Malloy program. Live from the West Coast, broadcasting for one more night. Until the Malloys return next Monday. Returning with Malloy Vision, I understand. If you know the Mike Malloy Show, if you're a real Mike head, you know what that means. Anyway, let's see. We are going to get to, at the top of the hour, we're going to try to get to your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. We'll try to open it up to anything you want to talk about. Another Ask Brad segment where you ask me anything you want and I answer it or I do not. But before we do, I want to get to this. George Bush knew that Guantanamo prisoners were innocent. He knew it. He didn't care. He didn't give a damn. 12-year-olds held without charges. 180 are still there. All right, we're going to talk about that in a second. So much accountability, so little time. I want to go out to Bob Kincaid because we're talking about this Massey mine disaster and their creep of a CEO, Don Blankenship. Bob Kincaid, of course, is the founder, the host, and founder of Head On Radio Network, quote, America's liberal voice. I didn't know we had one. That's headonradionetwork.com, otherwise known as Horn. Bob joins us tonight from his home, I believe his home, in West Virginia. Welcome to the Malloy Show, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, thank you very much, Brad. Yes, my humble home, such as it is, as well as the studio here in the hills.
I gotcha. Good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while. Boy, this is this must hit you guys hard out there in West Virginia. This Massey, this latest mine disaster.
Brad, I don't know if you can if a person can adequately give voice to the agony through which this entire state and, frankly, the Appalachian region has been dragged with this. This is and it's got that sick sensation of we've been here before and we're going to be here again.
Yeah, and you will be here again unless there's some kind of accountability for this company. I mean, this Massey Energy, this Don Blankenship. I've known about him. I've known about him on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I've known about him as one of these global warming denialists. But when you look back at some of the comments he's had to say, and you compare it, him talking about safety. Let me, Bob, let me play you this recent interview with Don Blankenship talking about safety regulations.
Are you concerned that the safety regulations or the safety factors in your industry, particularly through Massey, are being complied with?
Well, they're very difficult to comply with. There's so many of the laws that are, if you will, nonsensical from an engineering or a coal mining viewpoint. A lot of the politicians get emotional, as does the public, about the most recent accident, and it's easy to get laws on the books that are not truly helping the health or safety of coal miners. And I think we need to be very pragmatic and very careful when we're passing laws of that nature to make sure that we create as much safety and as much health as can be created for each of the resources we expend.
You feel you have a good safety record at Massey?
Well, it's been 19 of the last 20 years. It's been far better than the industry average. We've had very good success on the safety and the environmental side.
Okay. Thank you.
So nonsensical regulations, Bob. We can only get so much safety for each of the resources we have to expend. You know, what do you think? You're out there in West Virginia. What do you think when you hear this guy Blankenship talking about? And I should be clear, this was prior to the most recent accident. He was talking about a different accident. So you know, what are your thoughts when you hear him talking about, the cost efficiency of safety regulations, of nonsensical regulations?
Well, Brad, I've heard that clip about 15 times now, and I have to just bite my tongue to keep from screaming. You'll notice when he does that he expresses safety as a sort of algebraic function of resources expended.
Yeah.
In other words, the safety of miners and the safety of human beings and mining families is only another column in the tally sheet, in which the greatest factor is clearly profit.
Right. Yeah. And that's how they built. You know, everything it seems that he did out there, when he talks about our record is better than most. Desi, you were telling me, Desi Doyen, you were telling me that the company record was somehow better than most, but this mine?
This particular mine, yes. The Wall Street Journal reporting today, they said federal regulators released data today showing that the mine was cited for violations involving control of methane and dust more often than the average underground coal mine, 11 times more often than the average underground coal mine. So, you know, they may have a company-wide safety record. Maybe that's what Blankenship is referring to. But in this mine, not so much.
Well, they apparently, Bob Kincaid, figured out how to. I don't know if you saw this story tonight in the New York Times, that Massey Energy, you know, figured out they would get all of these warnings. And you get them up to a certain level. And if you can answer the violations, then you don't get the stepped up enforcement. They figured out a way to avoid the stepped up enforcement. This from a company that had more than 3,000 safety violations since 1995.
Brad, this is clearly abuse of process. This is an administrative legal process that was not designed to operate this way. But because Massey has a small army of lawyers on retainer, this is how they've figured out to keep running coal, as Don likes to say, without dealing with their safety issues. You know, just a little bit of background for folks. I don't know if they know, but these are staggering numbers. The numbers that Des mentioned about the numbers of fines, unpaid violations, et cetera, we all know that one of the reasons the rescue teams haven't been able to get in is because of the buildup of methane gas.
Right.
Governor Manchin, Joe Manchin, described the rails for the man trip cars and so forth inside the mine being twisted like pretzels. Imagine the force of an explosion like that and what would have to be present in order to make that happen. Well, what has to be present there is the ugly reality inside this particular mine. And get your mind around this. This thing generates, releases, 2 million cubic yards of methane gas in any given 24-hour cycle. Under those circumstances, I don't care what Don says about engineering and mining regulations. You know, that's almost impossible to deal with.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you get one cleared, you got another 2 million on top of you. Now, what rational person doesn't think that sooner or later there's going to be a disaster? What's really important here, I think, Brad, is to note that this horror, this little set piece in the Appalachian apocalypse, it has exposed the entire nightmare cycle of coal from its extraction all the way to its ultimate consumption. You know, you mentioned the science study a little bit ago. The American Lung Association has estimated that 24,000 American citizens die directly related to the burning of coal for electricity in this country every year.
How many? How many die?
24,000.
24,000.
And that's just from coal.
Oh, from
that's
just the burning
just from
of coal.
Coal.
Yeah.
Now, here in West Virginia, a brilliant researcher by the name of Dr. Michael Hendricks has done some economic calculations about what coal means to West Virginia, because we are constantly bombarded with coal keeps the lights on, coal is your friend, coal is the only economic hope that West Virginians can ever have. Well, Michael Hendricks put paid to that a few months ago. It costs, for every dollar that coal brings to the state of West Virginia, the state of West Virginia pays out $5.
Pays.
Some bargain, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
The New York Times says that a statement on the company's website says that the company does not condone any violations of mine safety and health administration regulations, and we strive to be in compliance with all regulations at all times. Some mine experts said that the failure to declare a pattern of violations was, however, a missed opportunity had they declared a pattern of violation. Now, it seems to me you got a pattern when you got 3,000 violations.
Well, not only but you know what? There's probably, remember, that stuff was written by legal weasels.
Yeah.
And what that means, you know, I don't disagree.
No, this wasn't the company. This wasn't the company saying that it was a missed opportunity. This is the Times saying that mine experts are saying that it was a failure. Had they declared a pattern of violations, then they could have stepped up enforcement.
Right,
they could have closed the mines.
That,
okay.
But this idea that they didn't that Massey didn't condone it. Mm-hmm. You know what? You have to pay attention to it to condone it.
And they weren't paying attention?
Oh, no. You know, this one of the miners who is dead now had been sent home at 3 o'clock early in his shift a couple of weeks before because methane levels had gone through the roof again.
Officials of the Mine Safety Agency said they were bound by the current regulations, which require them to issue warning letters, and that if companies successfully reduce their rate of violations by 30%, they are not to be found to have a pattern of violations. The officials added that before this week's explosion, they were considering tightening the regulations. Now, companies, it goes on to say, just two more graphs here. Companies can escape the added oversight even if they continue to be worse than the national average. The warning letter to the Upper Big Branch mine, for instance, said that the mine had been issued serious violations at a rate nearly twice the national average over the previous 2 years. 3 months later, the mine cut the rate to just above the national average, and that was enough of a reduction to avoid being labeled a pattern of violations. And then in March of 2008, a letter was sent to them that a pattern of violations did not exist at the mine, and so the agency, this is the federal agency, wrote, quote, "Congratulations on your achievements."
Wow.
And here's a Laurel and Hardy handshake. I know.
Yeah,
it is amazing to read that sort of bureaucratic speak. And Brad, I have spent a lot of time scratching my head and wondering how we solve this. And in a way, I think I've got the front end of a solution.
Yeah,
because we're going to hear a lot in Congress and a lot in the press about addressing minor safety issues. You know what? It's pretty clear from reading all the articles that had these basic regulations been followed to their logical conclusion and not been tormented by the administrative appeal process, it's likely this wouldn't have happened. I think it's also equally likely this would not have happened had it been a union mine. But beyond all of that, I heard the story the other day about the diplomat smoking a cigarette in the airplane, and there was an air marshal there who, for legal purposes, was God Almighty on that aircraft. Okay?
Yeah.
I would argue that I think the real solution to this, any proposed solution, safety solution or whatever, that allows this current administrative nightmare to persist is going to result in another one of these down the road. It just is. What we need inside these mines are badge-carrying mine marshals.
Yeah.
And they need to have the absolutely God-almighty authority to say, everybody out, shut it down, not a word.
And they used to. All right, we're talking with Bob Kincaid, Beck Moore, talking about the Massey Energy disaster that is Don Blankenship. You can keep this rolling, my friend. We got it. There we go. Yeah. Back with more on The Molloy Show right after this. Brad Friedman back on the Mike Malloy Show with my friend Bob Kincaid of the Head On Radio Network. He's out in West Virginia. We're talking about not just this coal mine explosion in Montcoal, West Virginia, but about the disaster that is the CEO of Massey Energy, Don Blankenship, who has, for my money, Bob Kincaid. This guy is one of the just one of the worst. Let me here's a montage that our friend Tom Hartman put together. Bob, just a minute long here. Just some of the comments from this creep. Go ahead, Tony.
Let me be clear about it. Al Gore, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. They don't know what they're talking about. They're totally wrong. What they do is nonsense. Pretty simple. They're all crazy. I mean, it is absolutely crazy.
Unions, communities, people, everybody's going to have to learn to accept that in the United States you have a capitalist society, and that capitalism, from a business viewpoint, is survival of the most productive.
You go from having your own car to carpooling to, you know, riding a bus to riding mass transit, and you eventually get down to where you're walking. And your apartments go from being nice apartments and homes with your own bathroom to sharing bathrooms and kitchens with four families. That's what socialism and the elimination of capitalism and free enterprise is all about. I don't believe climate change is real.
Bob, so he's talking about Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore being insane. They're crazy. And then he says stuff like, you know, capitalism is survival of the most productive, which it is. But this guy, what do you think when you hear this guy? I mean, he's just despicable. Am I wrong?
Psychopath.
He's a psychopath?
Yeah, really.
You know him. You know the way he runs these companies.
A good friend of mine over on the Horn, who is a psychotherapist, just sent me the he sent me the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4th edition criteria for antisocial personality disorder. You only have to meet three of them to qualify. This guy met five.
I don't doubt it. I can't believe some of these statements, and that there is no whole accountability for this guy. I hope somebody holds him accountable, but I'll tell you, he's sitting on the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now that we have the Citizens United decision, these guys can put as much corporate money into any damn campaign they want, for or against any candidate they want. And guys
Brad, don't think that he doesn't know that. He has all. You remember the story of him swanning around the Riviera with one of his Supreme Court judge buddies?
No, I don't. But I'm glad to know that. Yeah, he's hanging out with these guys.
He got caught.
Yeah.
With a multi-million-dollar case before the West Virginia Supreme Court. He got caught swanning around the French Riviera with one of the justices, who happened to be a buddy of his from Mingo County.
You know,
a guy by the name of Spike Maynard. Well, Spike got tossed out on his tuchus in the next election, and
right.
Now Don has anointed him as the Republican nominee for the 3rd congressional district seat, presently held by, you know, 15 or 18-term Democratic congressman, my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal. And frankly, Cole has never had a better friend than Nick Rahal.
And they can put unlimited money into these guys, into these campaigns. And, yeah, I do remember that story, that guy. Unbelievable. Listen, I got to get to a break. And, by the way, Obama made a statement in the Rose Garden today that the government and their employer know that they owe it to these employees' families to do everything possible to ensure their safety. Their employer knows that? Wake up, Obama. Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network, thanks for singing it and fighting the good fight out there. I wanted to talk about mountaintop removal, but we're going to have to do it next time. Thanks, Bob.
I understand. Anytime, Brad.
Thanks.
Thanks a million.
You bet. Bob's over in the chat room at bradblog.com. If you got further questions, you can hit him over there at bradblog.com. You're listening to The Malloy Show. Your calls ahead, 877-520-1150. Back after this. Welcome back. It's
Accountability Friday on the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman, your accountability blogger from bradblog.com, drafted into broadcast media duty here tonight. Bradcasting live from Los Angeles, actually downtown Burbank, as the sun sets and the fog rolls in. I think we're getting some weather here, Desi Doyen. You're not plugged in yet, are you? You got something in your mouth. You're not ready. What the? All right, Desi Doyen, my accountability buddy, is going to join me in a second as a little South Park joke for you. She, Desi Doyen is actually my co-host on the Green News Report. For those of you who either read bradblog.com or listen to the Green News Report on this fine progressive radio station, may know her. If you don't, if you haven't heard the Green News Report, then I say call your radio station and complain. Tell them you want to hear it. 6 minutes. We do it a couple of times a week. And we started doing it for the folks up there in San Francisco at Green 960, and they play at the top of the hour a couple of times a week. And yesterday's report, actually, there's a couple of things that you still have something in your mouth?
What? It was a cough drop. Come on.
But okay. Are you done now?
Yes.
Can you talk now?
Yes.
All right. By the way, stop on my Brad blog. We got a chat room over there, and Desi's been moderating it, but she's gone now. So you can say anything you want. Because she's on the air. Okay. Well, listen, we're very serious situation still out there in West Virginia at this coal mine disaster. And we're going to talk in a little bit with Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network about that. He's out in West Virginia. But no change in the status for the moment. These four miners are still...
And sadly, it looks like Governor Joe Manchin, the West Virginia governor, he came out in a press briefing tonight and said that it looks like they are going to come to a conclusion in the rescue attempt for those four West Virginia miners. He basically said that he called it finality, that the crews are prepared to try to make a run to the face. This is according to the AP, trying to make a run to the face to see if the miners are in the last refuge chamber.
All right. Well, let me hold the we'll come back to that story in a minute. Let's set this up with this is the Green News Report from yesterday. I'm going to go ahead and play this. There's also a couple of other issues here, some global warming denial crazies. Let's play the Green News Report, and then we'll come back, get your get the latest on West Virginia and all of that straight ahead. Go ahead. Let's run Green News Report from yesterday.
A setback in the search for missing miners and who's to blame.
Corporate profits, I recognize, have to be made, but more importantly, our most precious resource, our coal miner, needs to be protected.
Plus, record snow, record heat, record rain, record landslides.
All of those records and much more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Democrats in America were put on earth to do one thing: drag the ignorant hillbilly half of this country into the next century, which in their case is the 19th.
Good point, Bill Maher. But who's going to drag the Democrats into the 20th century? Never mind the 21st. This is your Green News Report. Green News Report is sponsored by you, our listeners. Yes, you. Please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and hit that PayPal button so that we can afford to continue bringing you the most feisty green news, politics, and analysis you'll find on the mainstream media. We rely on your support. Stop by bradblog.com today, hit the PayPal button, and send your vote for the Green News Report to continue. Okay, Des, troubling news continues out of West Virginia. What do you have for us today?
Yes, it's a devastating setback today on the search for four missing miners at the Upper Big Branch Mine near Montcoal, West Virginia. Here's West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin at a press briefing.
The scenarios that we were dealing with is of the quality of the air since this morning, since the men have gone in, the quality of the air has deteriorated. We were concerned about what conditions that air would cause with an explosive atmosphere. Unfortunately, we have the worst scenarios.
This morning, rescuers were evacuated after tests showed an explosive gas mixture of the same type that is believed to have caused the explosion that killed 25 miners on Monday. Congressman Nick Rahal, a Democrat who represents the district where the mine is located, promises a full congressional investigation.
There will be investigations conducted as to what happened here, Was the mine safety laws that we passed after previous disasters, such as Sago and Aracoma, were they effective or not? I happen to believe there are parts of it that are effective and parts that maybe were not. And we'll have to find out exactly the cause of this blast and then take appropriate action.
As usual, it takes a disaster to focus broadcast media attention on the coal industry, the checkered history of the mine company Massey Energy, and its controversial CEO Don Blankenship. Federal records show serious safety violations doubled at the mine last year, coinciding with a jump in production, and two citations of the most serious kind were given in January of this year relating to the ventilation system. In fact, two new citations were issued on the day of the explosion, but a mine safety inspector said those particular citations were not related to the explosion. The New York Times reports on a disturbing new trend in the coal industry since those new safety regulations that Congressman Rahal referred to were passed by Congress in 2006 after the Stako mining accident. Mining companies now stall payment of fines from these safety violations through litigation and appeals, resulting in a backlog of 18,000 appeals and over $210 million in contested fines.
Does this draw up the point that it's not the safety regulations so much that are the concern, but the enforcement of those safety regulations?
It's partly enforcement. It's also partly delaying tactics from the mining industry to avoid accountability for the enforcement that is done.
And I'm guessing the previous administration, the Bush administration, did not go out of their way to enforce those laws.
Oh, there's quite a bit of really, really not good history on that. We have more links to that on our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship is a dedicated climate change denier and has used his fortune and his company coffers to influence legislation and elections in his favor. In 2004, he poured $3 million into a West Virginia state Supreme Court election, ensuring the election of his preferred candidate to the bench, who then ruled in his favor on a multi-million dollar case against the company. The U.S. Supreme Court later overturned that ruling, saying the judge should have recused himself. Don Blankenship is on the board of directors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and is instrumental in the chamber's hostile stance to government regulation and climate change. In Brazil, over 150 people are dead and more are missing in the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro after intense storms dropped torrential rains this week, causing flooding and more than 180 landslides in the region. Another 200 people are believed dead when a mudslide washed away their hillside village in the region last night. Remember that wacky winter, the record-breaking snowstorms, and all over the news, especially in the nation's capital, and how the climate change denial industry and their friends in the media said this record snow was definitive proof that global warming was a hoax? Well, it's only the 1st of April, and already this week, the Northeast is seeing an unseasonable heat wave, breaking temperature records just 1 week after record rains and flooding.
We were able to get comment from Fox News and the global warming denialist industry on this record heat. Here it is. Yeah, that's what I thought. For much more on that, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Two quick programming notes. We welcome aboard our new Dallas affiliate, rationalbroadcasting.com. Please go check them out. Also, tonight, again, I'll be guest hosting The Mike Malloy Show, and one of my guests will be the great Mother Jones environmentalist reporter, Kate Shepard. Hope you'll join us for that. Stop by MikeMalloy.com or Bradblog.com for air affiliates and live streaming online. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that was last night. Mother Jones, Kate Shepard, we had her on last night. I guess I should have edited that out. Anyway, that was our Green News Report, and you know, I wanted to play it because frankly none of this stuff gets the kind of media attention that it needs to. We talked a little bit last night about the fact that healthcare reform, if you thought the fight over healthcare reform was something, the real fight is over climate legislation. Am I wrong, Des? I mean, isn't that, this is where you got billions and billions of dollars that are being tossed in. This is where the U.S. Chamber of, I mean, I think that was just a warm-up for the fight over climate change legislation that will make healthcare look like a tea party.
Well, yeah, it's definitely going to be the fight of the century, I think. I'm not sure people are really quite prepared for just how many billions of dollars are involved in the industries that, you know, we have to acknowledge have built our country. You know, cheap energy is the engine of growth and has been the engine of growth since the 19th century. Although we do have the capacity now and the ability to move into 21st century clean energy, right now fossil fuels are what makes this country run. And, of course, there's also external costs that go along with that. But, you know, as long as it's
free to pollute. And one of those external costs we just saw this week where we lost these 25 miners, maybe another four. You know, that's the real world cost. And what is it, three Three minors a day die from black lung
disease. Yes, on average. And it's just one of the many externalities that come from burning dirty fossil fuels. It's not just in the deaths of people who work directly with these kinds of fuels, but it's also in the air pollution, the water pollution, pollution of the soil. It's all kinds of things that these are external costs that, you know, I think it was the National Academy of Sciences last year estimated the external costs of fossil fuels in air pollution alone, healthcare costs and some of the environmental costs is $120 billion a year. And that's not everything. That's just that one narrow area that they looked at that they estimated. And that's external cost for fossil fuels.
And the cost to national security, the fact that we've lost, you know, how many thousands of troops fighting over oil, for Christ's sake. I mean, we could be... people haven't noticed, but there's this free energy that's coming down from the skies all the time. That nobody's tapping into, are they, for some odd reason?
Well, it's been very difficult to get that sort of funding together and get the kind of attention paid to clean energy when you have the entrenched interests that are allowed to pollute for free and have made billions of dollars. So naturally, they're gonna want to hold on to that.
And not only made billions of dollars, we'll take a quick break, and I want to get the update on the Massey mine. And I know you had something else on, was it the regulations follow-up on yesterday's report? We'll get to after the break. But talking about the profits, $45 billion in profits by ExxonMobil last year in 2009. Of course, I don't mind that. They're welcome to have their profits, I guess. But how much did these great patriots pay in federal taxes last year on their $45 billion in profit? Are you sitting down? Because I don't think you get as good a tax rate as ExxonMobil does. $45 billion in profit. They paid $0 in federal taxes last year. Other than that, we need to save this economy and cut that corporate tax rate, don't we? Unbelievable. Brad on the Malloy Show with Desi Doyen, Bob Kincaid coming up, much more straight ahead.
It's not easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
Oh, Desi, you're flashy water and the sparkles in the water.
Oh, you're sweet to say so.
I am. Brad Friedman here for Mike Malloy with my co-host and the Green News Report managing editor, Desi Doyen. We're going to be joined by Bob Kincaid in a second to talk about this. This unbelievable jerk, Don Blankenship of Massey Energy, and what he has done out there, his opinions, his attitude, the safety violation. I mean, I'm just appalled by this guy. We got some tape. I mean, this is about accountability. By the way, in case you thought this was, you know, all green and crunchy, no. We're kicking ass and taking names here as well. Des, you had two pieces of follow-up here. You had the latest, at least from AP, on the mine disaster,
right,
where we are right now?
Just to be clear, the AP is reporting that the governor, West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin, says that by midnight, rescue teams will likely know the fate of the four missing miners inside the mine where the explosion left 25 dead. They've already reached one of the chambers. There were two that were
these
potential.
These are the safety
these
chambers.
These are the safe rescue chambers, and Bob Kincaid can set us straight on this for sure.
Yeah.
But I believe that those were not put in place until after 2006, the Sago mine disaster, where there was no place for them to go and there wasn't enough oxygen to save them. So they have these rescue chambers. There were two in the area that they would potentially have been able to get to if they had survived the blast. One of those rescue chambers, it looks like, is empty. Therefore, there's only one other chance. And those rescue chambers are only, you know, required by law to have 4 days' worth of oxygen and food and water in them. And so they are nearing the end of the time at which those rescue chambers would have helped them anyway.
And so he says, we'll know, Governor Manchin says, by tonight. He feels, because they haven't been able to get in there. They had to pump like four truckloads of nitrogen in there to keep the the fire from blowing up again, basically.
Right. You know, and we're talking, they're about, I think it's a mile and a half to 2 miles inside the mine, so it takes a really, really, really long time for the rescuers to get there, and then when they test the air, then they find out that it's explosive and all, then they have to back out, so...
And, okay, just we got to get to a break here shortly, and then we're going to go to Bob Kincaid out in West Virginia. But you had a quick follow-up on the regulations?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of different things. USA Today had a story today about how coal mining operators, you know, that they have all these fines. Well, what they've been doing since 2006 is they have been delaying the paying of those fines by appealing them. So it kind of puts a halt on any kind of action there so that, you know, the Mine Safety and Health Administration is allowed to shut down a mine for violations, but only, but not if it's in appeal. So they can keep going if they have a violation in appeal. They've only paid 7% of the fines they've received in the last 3 years. That's 113 million fines and major penalties that have not actually been paid because they're on appeal right now. Yeah. That's the majority of them.
And it looks like Massey Energy was able to come up with yet another trick. This was in the New York Times, and I hate to rely on the New York Times these days for anything, frankly. As some of you may know, they reported that the company was told, Massey Energy was told, that it could be cited for a pattern of violations, which would have allowed for stricter federal oversight of the mine. Yet, the mine escaped the stepped-up enforcement, even though it continued to amass violations, according to federal records, with some pretty clever tricks. Anything to avoid accountability. So we're going to cover that with Bob Kincaid in a bit after this break. And what was the other thing that I wanted to mention here about that? Oh, Obama. What Obama had to say. You know, no, I know we don't have time. Okay. But we'll play it when we come back. We need some accountability there, too. He was standing in the Rose Garden today supporting Massey Energy. And saying that the employees, that their employers care about safety. Really? Do they? I don't think the record shows as much. We will ask Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio Network out in West Virginia when we come back. Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy program. Stay with us. Much more straight. Blind commissioner. They've got him in a trance. One hand is tied to the tightrope walker.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Never scared. What? Is that you, Tony? I'm blaming Tony. The computer. Blame the computer. Yes, I am. Stuck in the middle with you. No place I would rather be here live on the Mike Malloy program. Live from the West Coast, broadcasting for one more night. Until the Malloys return. Next Monday, returning with Malloy Vision, I understand. If you know the Mike Malloy Show, if you're a real Mike head, you know what that means. Anyway, let's see. We are going to get to, at the top of the hour, we're going to try to get to your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. We'll try to open it up to anything you want to talk about. Another Ask Brad segment where you ask me anything you want and I answer it or I do not. But before we do, I want to get to this. George Bush knew that Guantanamo prisoners were innocent. He knew it. He didn't care. He didn't give a damn. 12-year-olds held without charges. 180 are still there. All right, we're going to talk about that in a second. So much accountability, so little time. I want to go out to Bob Kincaid because we're talking about this Massey mine disaster and their creep of a CEO, Don Blankenship. Bob Kincaid, of course, is the founder, the host, and founder of Head On Radio Network, quote, America's liberal voice. I didn't know we had one. That's headonradionetwork.com, otherwise known as Horn. Bob joins us tonight
from his home, I believe his home, in West Virginia. Welcome to the Malloy Show, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, thank you very much, Brad. Yes, my humble home, such as it is, as well as the studio here in the hills.
I gotcha. Good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while. This must hit you guys hard out there in West Virginia, this latest mine disaster.
Brad, I don't know if you can if a person can adequately give voice to the agony through which this entire state and frankly the Appalachian region has been dragged with this. This is, and it's got that sick sensation of we've been here before and we're going to be here again.
Yeah, and you will be here again unless there's some kind of accountability for this company. I mean, this Massey Energy, this Don Blankenship. I've known about him. I've known about him on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I've known about him as one of these global warming denialists. But when you look back at some of the comments he's had to say, and you compare it, him talking about safety. Let me, Bob, let me play you this recent interview with Don Blankenship talking about safety regulations.
Are you concerned that the safety regulations or the safety factors in your industry, particularly through Massey, are being complied with?
Well, they're very difficult to comply with. There's so many of the laws that are, if you will, nonsensical from an engineering or a coal mining viewpoint. A lot of the politicians get emotional, as does the public, about the most recent accident, and it's easy to get laws on the books that are not truly helping the health or safety of coal miners. And I think we need to be very pragmatic and very careful when we're passing laws of that nature to make sure that we create as much safety and as much health as can be created for each of the resources we expend.
You feel you have a good safety record at Massey?
Well, it's been 19 of the last 20 years. It's been far better than the industry average. We've had very good success on the safety and the environmental side.
Okay. Thank you.
So nonsensical regulations, Bob. We can only get so much safety for each of the resources we have to expend. You know, what do you think? You're out there in West Virginia. What do you think when you hear this guy Blankenship talking about? And I should be clear, this was prior to the most recent accident. He was talking about a different accident. So you know, what are your thoughts when you hear him talking about the cost efficiency of safety regulations, of nonsensical regulations?
Well, Brad, I've heard that clip about 15 times now, and I have to just bite my tongue to keep from screaming. You'll notice when he does that he expresses safety as a sort of algebraic function of resources expended.
Yeah.
In other words, the safety of miners and the safety of human beings and mining families is only another column in the tally sheet in which the greatest factor is clearly profit.
Right. Yeah. And that's how they built. You know, everything it seems that he did out there, when he talks about our record is better than most. Desi, you were telling me, Desi Doyen, you were telling me that the company record was somehow better than most, but this mine?
This particular mine, yes. The Wall Street Journal reporting today, they said federal regulators released data Friday, today, showing that the mine was cited for violations involving control of methane and dust more often than the average underground coal mine, 11 times more often than the average underground coal mine. So, you know, they may have a company-wide safety record. Maybe that's what Blankenship is referring to. But in this mine, not so much.
Well, they apparently, Bob Kincaid, figured out how to. I don't know if you saw this story tonight in the New York Times, that Massey Energy, you know, figured out they would get all of these warnings. And you get them up to a certain level, and if you can answer the violations, then you don't get the stepped up enforcement. They figured out a way to avoid the stepped up enforcement. This from a company that had more than 3,000 safety violations since 1995.
Brad, this is clearly abuse of process. This is an administrative legal process that was not designed to operate this way. But because Massey has a small army of lawyers on retainer, this is how they figured out to keep running coal, as Don likes to say, without dealing with their safety issues. You know, just a little bit of background for folks. I don't know if they know, but these are staggering numbers. The numbers that Des mentioned about the numbers of fines, unpaid violations, et cetera, we all know that one of the reasons the rescue teams haven't been able to get in is because of the buildup of methane gas.
Right.
Governor Manchin, Joe Manchin, described the rails for the man trip cars and so forth inside the mine being twisted like pretzels. Imagine the force of an explosion like that and what would have to be present in order to make that happen. Well, what has to be present there is the ugly reality inside this particular mine. And get your mind around this. This thing generates, releases, 2 million cubic yards of methane gas in any given 24-hour cycle. Under those circumstances, I don't care what Don says about engineering and mining regulations. You know, that's almost impossible to deal with.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you get one cleared, you got another 2 million on top of you. Now, what rational person doesn't think that sooner or later there's going to be a disaster? What's really important here, I think, Brad, is to note that this horror, this little set piece in the Appalachian apocalypse, it has exposed the entire nightmare cycle of coal from its extraction all the way to its ultimate consumption. You know, you mentioned the science study a little bit ago. The American Lung Association has estimated that 24,000 American citizens die directly related to the burning of coal for electricity in this country every year.
How many? How many die?
24,000.
24,000.
And that's just from coal.
Oh, from
that's
just the burning
just
of coal.
Coal.
Yeah.
Now, here in West Virginia, a brilliant researcher by the name of Dr. Michael Hendricks has done some economic calculations about what coal means to West Virginia, because we are constantly bombarded with coal keeps the lights on, coal is your friend, coal is the only economic hope that West Virginians can ever have. Well, Michael Hendricks put paid to that a few months ago. It costs, for every dollar that coal brings to the state of West Virginia, the state of West Virginia pays out $5.
Pays.
Some bargain, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
The New York Times says that a statement on the company's website says that the company does not condone any violations of mine safety and health administration regulations, and we strive to be in compliance with all regulations at all times. Some mine experts said that the failure to declare a pattern of violations was, however, a missed opportunity had they declared a pattern of violation. Now, it seems to me you got a pattern when you got 3,000 violations.
Well, not only but you know what? There's probably, remember, that stuff was written by legal weasels.
Yeah.
And what that means, you know, I don't disagree.
No, this wasn't the company. This wasn't the company saying that it was a missed opportunity. This is the Times saying that mine experts are saying that it was a failure. Had they declared a pattern of violations, then they could have stepped up enforcement.
Right,
they could have closed the mines.
That,
okay.
But this idea that they didn't that Massey didn't condone it. Mm-hmm. You know what? You have to pay attention to it to condone it.
And they weren't paying attention?
Oh, no. You know, this one of the miners who is dead now had been sent home at 3 o'clock early in his shift a couple of weeks before because methane levels had gone through the roof again.
Officials of the Mine Safety Agency said they were bound by the current regulations, which require them to issue warning letters, and that if companies successfully reduce their rate of violations by 30%, they are not to be found to have a pattern of violations. The officials added that before this week's explosion, they were considering tightening the regulations. Now, companies, it goes on to say, just two more graphs here. Companies can escape the added oversight even if they continue to be worse than the national average. The warning letter to the Upper Big Branch mine, for instance, said that the mine had been issued serious violations at a rate nearly twice the national average over the previous 2 years. 3 months later, the mine cut the rate to just above the national average, and that was enough of a reduction to avoid being labeled a pattern of violations. And then in March of 2008, a letter was sent to them that a pattern of violations did not exist at the mine, and so the agency, this is the federal agency, wrote, quote, "Congratulations on your achievements."
Wow.
And here's a Laurel and Hardy handshake. I know.
Yeah.
It is amazing to read that sort of bureaucratic speak. And, Brad, I have spent a lot of time scratching my head and wondering how we solve this. And in a way, I think I've got the front end of a solution.
Yeah,
because we're going to hear a lot in Congress and a lot in the press about addressing minor safety issues. You know what? It's pretty clear from reading all the articles that had these basic regulations been followed to their logical conclusion and not been tormented by the administrative appeal process, it's likely this wouldn't have happened. I think it's also equally likely this would not have happened had it been a union mine. But beyond all of that, I heard the story the other day about the diplomat smoking a cigarette in the airplane, and there was an air marshal there who, for legal purposes, was God Almighty on that aircraft. Okay?
Yeah.
I would argue that I think the real solution to this, any proposed solution, safety solution or whatever, that allows this current administrative nightmare to persist is going to result in another one of these down the road. It just is. What we need inside these mines are badge-carrying mine marshals.
Yeah.
And they need to have the absolutely God-almighty authority to say, everybody out, shut it down, not a word.
And they used to. All right, we're talking with Bob Kincaid. Back more talking about the Massey Energy disaster that is Don Blankenship. You can keep this rolling, my friend. We got it. There we go. Yeah. Back with more on The Molloy Show right after this. Brad Friedman back on the Mike Molloy Show with my friend Bob Kincaid of the Head On Radio Network. He's out in West Virginia. We're talking about not just this coal mine explosion in Montcoal, West Virginia, but about the disaster that is the CEO of Massey Energy, Don Blankenship, who has, for my money, Bob Kincaid. This guy is one of the just one of the worst. Here's a montage that our friend Tom Hartman put together, Bob. Just a minute long here. Just some of the comments from this creep. Go ahead, Tony.
Let me be clear about it. Al Gore, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. They don't know what they're talking about. They're totally wrong. What they do is nonsense. Pretty simple. They're all crazy. I mean, it is absolutely crazy.
Unions, communities, people, everybody's going to have to learn to accept that in the United States you have a capitalist society, and that capitalism, from a business viewpoint, is survival of the most productive.
So you go from having your own car to carpooling to, you know, riding the bus to riding mass transit, and you eventually get down to where you're walking. And your apartments go from being nice apartments and homes with your own bathroom to sharing bathrooms and kitchens with four families. That's what socialism and the elimination of capitalism and free enterprise is all about. I don't believe climate change is real.
Bob, so he's talking about Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore being insane. They're crazy. And then he says stuff like, you know, capitalism is survival of the most productive, which it is. But this guy, what do you think when you hear this guy? I mean, he's just despicable. Right, am I wrong?
He's a psychopath.
He's a psychopath?
Yeah, really.
You know him. You know the way he runs these companies.
A good friend of mine over on the Horn, who is a psychotherapist, just sent me the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, fourth edition criteria for antisocial personality disorder. You only have to meet three of them to qualify. This guy met five.
I don't doubt it. I can't believe some of these statements, and that there is no whole accountability for this guy. I hope somebody holds him accountable, but I'll tell you, he's sitting on the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now that we have the Citizens United decision, these guys can put as much corporate money into any damn campaign they want, for or against any candidate they want. And guys
Brad, don't think that he doesn't know that. He has all. You remember the story of him swanning around the Riviera with one of his Supreme Court judge buddies?
No, I don't. But I'm glad to know that. Yeah, he's hanging out with these guys.
He got caught.
Yeah.
With a multi-million-dollar case before the West Virginia Supreme Court. He got caught swanning around the French Riviera with one of the justices, who happened to be a buddy of his from Mingo County.
You know,
by the name of Spike Maynard. Well, Spike got tossed
right
out on his tuchus in the next election, and
right
now Don has anointed him as the Republican nominee for the third congressional district seat, presently held by 15 or 18 term Democratic congressman, my congressman Nick Joe Rahal, and frankly, Cole has never had a better friend than Nick Rahal.
And they can put unlimited money into these guys, into these campaigns, and yeah, I do remember that story, that guy. Unbelievable. Listen, I got to get to a break. And by the way, Obama made a statement in the Rose Garden today that the government and their employer know that they owe it to these employees' families to do everything possible to ensure their safety. Their employer knows that? Wake up, Obama. Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network, thanks for singing it and fighting the good fight out there. I wanted to talk about mountaintop removal, but we're going to have to do it next time. Thanks, Bob.
I understand. Anytime, Brad.
Thanks. You bet. Bob's over in the chat room at bradblog.com. If you got further questions, you can hit him over there at bradblog.com. You're listening to The Molloy Show. Your calls ahead, 877-520-1150. Back after this.